The name and shame.
Those companies that try and fly under the radar, they're not going to get away with it any longer.
Sayona, 4:31 p.m.
Nimi came in at 4:31.
Alice Queen, 4:40 p.m.
Poseidon Nickel, 4:23.
New World Resources, 4:55 p.m.
Lefroy,
4:07 p.m. And Angel Metals. So this one dropped at 3:49 p.m.
Now we've got more friends of the show. These ones, AVZ Minerals. They came in early, so I think they might be watching the show, guys. Their cash balance dropped from 27.3 million to 18.9 million over the quarter, 3.5 million of which was in admin and corporate costs.
Welcome to August, money miners. JD Trav.
Mr. Matthew Michael.
Matty, how you going?
Oh, I'm always bloody sensational delivering the go-to miner news, if I might say so myself. Boys.
Name and shame's a fun one as well.
Name and shame.
I feel like I'm getting named and shame today.
Well, there's a term for that, but yeah, you're pretty much, if anyone's going to slag anyone off for PMETs, it's Night Market Research and Travis Ricciardo.
To be clear, I've never recommended anyone take any position on that one.
Righto, JD, run through for the day, mate. What are we talking about? We've got a bit to discuss.
Yeah, mate, we've got name and shame to start. And then what else have we got, guys? We've got IGO on the menu, 29 medals.
Patriots investment from Albemarle.
Of course, we have to.
Big ticker.
No, and then you delved into Allkem /...
Yeah, well, Allkem put out possible underground feasibility study coming up. So I thought, well, let's explore what other lithium operations might be going underground soon.
Pick your interest,
Wheeling and dealing. Fun facts with Matty, irrelevant history all combined.
I look forward to it, Matty.
That's most of it, eh?
I think so.
Right, let's get into it. Now, our partners at Anytime Exploration Services bringing you the show today. Thanks to Seamus Murphy and the team. Check them out. Do everything, exploration, bloke and female hire, equipment, core cutting, core storage. Appreciate the help for the show, Anytime Exploration Services.
Yeah, cheers, guys.
Let's rip it.
Good on you, Seamus.
The name and shame. Name and Seamus, you could say.
Alrighty.
What is name and shame, boys, for people that didn't catch the one last quarter?
I think the best way to describe it is when you see the very end of the quarterly rush, the last day of quarterlies, which was just passed yesterday. And you see, I think when we presented yesterday, 850 announcements in, and that was just at midday.
It would have gone over 1,000 easily.
It would have gone well over 1,000. So we're just here to name and shame to the investors out there listening that those companies that try and fly under the radar, they're not going to get away with it any longer.
I reckon next quarterly, I reckon maybe just we'll pick a couple from some other sectors that might have been interesting as well. We're focusing on mining, but I'm sure the other sectors of the ASX might have had some interesting ones too. Just a couple. Right, that's boys, it. Rip it.
To start with, mate, we do highlight the ones that come in after market. I think those are the ones that the real culprits cut rolling then, Matty. So to start with, Sayona, 4:31 p.m. drop, and this is all in Eastern States time.
Friends of the show.
Friends of the show, Sayona. So, you know, what were the red flags that we saw? Well, what they had indicated to investors would be a July 1st shipment. Now the wording is first shipment this quarter, which means, wait, are we going to wait till September to see the first shipment of concentrate? Still no word on who the product is going to and for what price. Operating cash flow for the quarter was down $74 million and looks like they're losing money on the product going to Piedmont based on, you know, the OPEX in the quarter. On the plus side, directors exercised OPEX yesterday at 15 cents, which is the current share price.
This one's a cracker, guys. Nimi came in at 4:31. Now, that late time may have been due in part to them only having $621,000 in cash left, but clearly that added time over the whole month didn't actually allow them enough time to proofread the report because it came out and the cash balance as at 31 March, not 30 June. So just a quick reminder, do a command F, check the dates before you flick them out, companies.
Alice Queen, 4:40 p.m. ended the quarter with, wait for it, a whopping $42,000. To add salt into the wounds, it appears they kept the lights on during the quarter via a convertible note paying a 12% coupon. Ouch.
Poseidon Nickel, 4:23. So we've spoken about them a bit in the past. They came out with the quarterly showing $5.7 million in cash after spending $4.3 over the last quarter. And you'll see in Section 8, the companies often get queried about whether they have funds to go on over the next quarter. They had an interesting response to the second question there. The company said that they, Poseidon, have taken steps to prepare for a capital raise and or an asset sale as and when required.
Asset sale, like Johnson? What do you reckon?
EBA.
New World Resources, 4:55 p.m. So 4:55, you're looking for the red flags here. But and it's a late quarterly, but I think it's late because they had five ASX releases to drop on the same day. And, you know, some of them related to this $5 million investment from RCF's Opportunities Fund, which I believe is the one managed by Joe Bishop, who is based here in Perth. At face value, you look at the terms, you think it's great. The issue price of 3.2 cents per share, that's a premium to the 3 cent last trade price. But that would be the wrong take here because RCF are also getting two free attaching options for every five shares, and you got to factor that one in.
I think they featured in last quarterlies too, eh?
I think they did.
We might have some repeat offenders. Now we've got more friends of the show. These ones, AVZ Minerals, they came in early, so I think they might be watching the show, guys. 11:57 a.m. Now, their cash balance dropped from 27.3 million to 18.9 million over the quarter, 3.5 million of which was in admin and corporate costs. Now, they were obviously still fighting on many different fronts, namely over the legal rights to the Manono asset in the DRC. Another thing that stood out to me is that they've done a fair bit of drilling at Roche Dure, and they've also completed a camp construction, which is fascinating considering they're fighting for legal rights to the asset.
Got to justify the big fees, mate.
You got to give them a pat on the back. They got it in before 4 o'clock.
Must be watching the show. Must be watching the show.
Trav, this one's a belter.
Lefroy, 4:07 p.m. So just before the buzzer. I must say the quarterly report looks very different to the usual quarterly report. And what do I mean by that? I have never in my entire life seen a quarterly report with a cover page. It looks like an annual report. It's very funny. It's very schmick. I mean, on the cash flow, they've got little cash left, just 440K, but ATO refund of 900K landed post-quarter end. The real talking point, though, is the cover page on the quarterly report.
Absolutely. Jindalee Resources, they are developing an asset in America, a lithium asset. Now, the headline highlights $8.3 million in cash and securities. But don't be fooled, $6 million of that $8.3 is in shares, which are escrowed for another 18 months. So the company is capped at $102 million and they've got $2.3 million in cash in the bank.
That's the real number, not the 8.3.
That's it. And there was one other detail that stood out. So over the past 3 months, the company spent $203,000 on exploration, while they spent $121,000 on directors and consultants fees. I'm not sure about that ratio, guys.
Righto, Trav.
Last one.
Last but not least.
Pan Asia Metals. So this one dropped at 3:49 p.m. Market cap of $33 million, and the quarterly dropped after market yesterday. And then pre-open today, they're in a trading halt raising money. So poor market. Didn't even get a chance to get some price discovery in this one post the quarterly before they're raising money. And so the devil's in the detail on this one. There's 548K cash left at the quarter end. Strangely, there's a fund that agreed to tip in $1.2 million of the $4.5 million placement that this company did in January, and they still haven't stumped up the funds to the company. But the company is banking on it coming in the door soon.
Very well done, boys. Love your bloody work. Right, our great friends at Patriot Battery Metals, PMET, have struck a sensational deal, you'd say. Yeah. $109 million Canadian dollars invested by Albemarle
into, I think,
PMET. They're back up 10% today.
We have to give them credit. This is a great deal that they've done. So obviously we spoke about them yesterday at length. They had the resource come out. This deal, they're marketing it being done at a 10% premium to VWAP, and we're obviously fans of deals done at a premium. Obviously bearing in mind that the stock had traded in the sort of $17 range and it closed on Friday at $15.40.
Yeah, so $17.50 mid-June, and they've done the deal at $15.29.
Yeah.
So it's a premium to the last 10 days, but they did see a bit of a decline in the last month. So
yeah,
in relation to those prices, still a discount in a way.
And that is the TSXV share price that we're talking about. Obviously in Australia it trades on the CDI. So yeah, just on the point of the premium, we've seen it a few times lately, in particular in the lithium space. Delta, Leo Lithium come to mind, yeah, doing these strategic investments by big companies coming in and taking a stake at a premium. And yeah, it's just a good look to have a company like Albemarle come in and take a stake in your business. Now
I think Develop's first capital raise, I think it was a year and a bit ago, their one was at a 14% premium when they first got going. So, yeah, obviously good investor support behind William.
I've got two quick points to make on the premium one. Is, you know, it just shows the commitment that these large chemicals players are having to secure supply and et cetera. The other point that I'll make on the premium is think of the opportunity cost for Patriot, because they're a Canadian company. The opportunity cost when you're raising money is actually like an even less dilutionary outcome. It's you raise money and you do the flow through financing. So you can actually do it at an even higher premium, and then the investors get a tax credit for it. So
that's in Canada, right?
In Canada only, yeah. To Canadian investors, they're eligible for it, but Patriot have done it in the past. So that's the opportunity cost, and it probably gives you a bit more credence to argue for participation at a premium, because I don't think Albemarle is eligible for that in this instance.
There were a few other interesting aspects which also brought the Delta deal to my mind, and that's with regard to how Albemarle needs to vote in the first 12 months of the deal. So they need to vote in favour of whatever the management decides, right, Maddie?
And that was the deal, same deal with Idemitsu with Delta.
Yeah, I think it's a slightly longer period for that one. This one's 12 months, right?
Yeah, so look, it's a great – they're getting Albemarle on board. They've also signed for 4.9% of Patriot, Albemarle have taken. They've also...
Yeah, on a fully diluted basis.
Yeah, so they've also entered a MOU for the assessment of future opportunities for a downstream lithium hydroxide plant. Albemarle is it's a chemicals business, isn't it? Like they're the downstream component, the off-taker for these deals. So look, yeah, good. We've said all along that Patriot is going to end up in the hands of a major somehow. It's a massive deposit. It's going to need a lot of capital to get it going, and possibly, as we said yesterday, could be next decade. That's where it belongs. So this is the first possible step for it. So I guess we'll go into the deal, what the MOU was, because it's interesting, and we'll go why it was probably a good deal for them. So it's only a 12-month investor rights agreement, and that says that Albemarle can't take their stake to above 4.9%, but they can participate in future cap raises to maintain their holding, and certain restrictions on dispositions of company shares by Albemarle, which means they obviously can't sell the shares within 12 months. And the big one, as you said, JD, Albemarle will vote in favour of management's recommendations for shareholder votes, same as what Idemitsu was for Delta. So they're aligned on that way.
Is that just for 12 months, that one?
Just for 12 months, for what I can say, yep. So it's not a bloody, not a home run. Is it going to play a part in other parties looking to take them over and have an Albemarle on the register for the voting? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, the Delta one, that was for, I believe, a 15% stake in the business. Yeah. So, getting into the technical details there, it's not really a blocking stake, although, you add that and they have a register with a lot of substantial shareholders, so you'd need to win a lot of people over with a lot of, big blocks in the company to get any sort of deal done. And these guys voting in line with management just makes it that much harder if you've not got them on board.
So they've got, 109 million bucks coming in the door from Albemarle now. So you can see them getting this resource sexed up for a major to look at it.
Yeah,
seems to be the logical path that this is going to go.
They'll have plenty of cash on hand. They've got a bunch of, warrants and options expiring in the near term, which will be exercised. That'll bring more cash in the door for the company as well. So
interesting to see the time frame on how long this plays out. We'll be watching it closely.
Absolutely.
Well done. IGO, come out with an announcement yesterday. They were down, they were down 6 or 7% from memory.
Because I got to love you and leave you. I've got a commitment, but I trust you to finish the pod well.
Oh, mate, that's all right. Say goodbye to the fans.
Middlebury fans.
He's got a coffee. Get some bloody sponsorship or something while you're out, Trav. Don't come back empty-handed, fuck's sake. Right, JD. IGO.
All right, let's get into it.
Do you want me to change spots? I'll come over to the main table.
Yeah, so let's get into IGO. They came out with a capital management policy, and that was, I think, the share price coming off was also to do with what's going on in the quarterly front as well, Maddie. And we're going to flash it up on the screen for people watching on YouTube, as well as try and describe it for those podcast listeners out there, and it's worth taking a look at. So essentially you've got on the left-hand side two funnels of cash coming in the door, and that's from operating cash flow as well as external capital, be it debt or equity. And then this capital is invested across various channels, so that could be exploration, sustaining capital, or inorganic growth. Coming out of these investments, you've got shareholder returns. And here's a quote on shareholder returns. Target returns of between 20 to 40% of underlying free cash flow when liquidity is under 1 billion, and board to consider higher returns when liquidity is above 1 billion. So, Maddie, the means through which this will be executed is obviously dividends and buybacks, as well as providing the opportunity for debt reduction and inorganic growth, i.e. M&A. Now, there was one more line in the announcement that stood out to me, and I'm paraphrasing here, but they said IGO may seek capital to grow our business via disciplined M&A. Now, here's hoping that that disciplined M&A is a bit better than that acquisition they did last year, right?
Well, it might have been disciplined at the time. It just lost about $800 million worth.
Yeah.
This year.
On a $1.2 or $1.3 billion deal, I'm not sure if we call that discipline, Matty. So let's have a quick overview of what's going on at IGO at the moment. They've got Greenbushes. Obviously, that's a sort of non-operating 25% ownership interest from IGO's perspective. They've also got downstream lithium hydroxide processing capabilities at Kwinana. That's a 49% ownership interest. And things aren't going great there. And then you've also got the nickel assets. So you've got Nova, which has got about a few years left of it, and then Western Areas, which has been significantly written down, as we've just touched on. Now, I want to look into this downstream lithium debate. So the Kwinana hydroxide facility is meant to be running at nameplate capacity already. Now, you look at the quarterly that came out a couple of days ago, and over the last quarter, they produced 124 tonnes. So nameplate is for 24,000 tonnes per annum. So that is way, you know, that it's nowhere near nameplate capacity.
And they produced 900 odd tonne in the March quarter. So it's like even significantly down. So that was already down itself.
Yeah.
And it's come down from 900 odd tonne down to 140.
Yeah. So they had a planned maintenance switch off, and things never really got cranking after that again. They've said for the quarter going forward that they want it to be running at 20% capacity. And just going a bit off IGO for a second here, tying in the likes of Wesfarmers and SQM, the delays they've had.
That's downstream. Mount Holland.
Yep, that's right. You know, perhaps Chris Ellison on the call was right, and going downstream isn't all it sort of cracks up to be. There seems to be a bit of a sentiment change toward going downstream. You feel like a year ago, and perhaps, you know, a bit more, it was all the rage. You had to go downstream or you're not going to capture enough value. And, you know, be it across two different aspects now. Firstly, the pricing seems to have changed. And secondly, how hard it is to execute going downstream. There seems to be a bit of a sentiment change toward how investors look at companies and their intentions to go downstream.
And this announcement definitely wasn't a good advertisement for going downstream in Australia.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. So just piecing this all together, Matty, on IGO, I think it's, you know, in part easy to say that with all the nickel things coming off and the cash management framework they've just come out with, that they're potentially looking at M&A. But I don't think this is quite the right inference to take just yet, because, of course, you have to remember that the new CEO, Ivan Vella, is only starting in December. He's realistically not going to do a deal for a while. So I don't think you're going to see any sort of M&A. They're going to focus on getting things right over the short term.
Why don't you reckon he'll do a deal straight away? Do you think he'd want
to
more?
He just needs to get his feet under the desk, you know, get familiar with everything. Nothing's going to happen before that. So it could be a while.
I think put himself at the forefront if he does a deal pretty quickly. But he's like, right, I'm the new big dog in town.
Yeah, I'd imagine he has to go like show face, you know, meet all the investors, get familiar with the register and the culture of the company and all that beforehand, before he, you know, really takes charge of the operation there.
Where do you think IGO is going to seek an M&A? Like, we saw their failed bid for Essential. MinRes blocked them out on that one. Are they potentially another player get into this? I'll go into it in the next segment about MinRes really being that power in that new potential lithium region around Mount Marion, that whole area around Cal. Do you think they've got stakes in a lot of these companies, and they're really whether and which are essentially blocking stakes, where do you think IGO's potential is going
to
be?
Yeah, so I've got two things to say to that, Maddie. Firstly, you look at the business, and people always refer to them as a lithium and nickel business, but the nickel realistically is a very small component of the overall business now. On a NAV basis, I dare say well north of 90% now is made up by the various lithium operations.
And that's because they make shitloads out of Greenbushes, and that takes such a big chunk of it.
Exactly. And Nova winding off, and the other one, you know, the old Western Areas assets being written down means, you know, that's gone in the opposite direction. And the second thing I'd say, Maddie, is that they have an arrangement, to my understanding, with Tianqi, that any additional lithium business that they do is going to have to involve Tianqi. So that's why the bid for Essential was a joint venture. So just one to keep in mind.
Do you think there's a bit of, I know they mentioned M&A, but at the moment, does it feel like we're a bit left in the dark about what their long-term strategy is? Because you've got Nova dying off. They've failed their bid for Essential. We haven't sort of seen them pop up elsewhere. They've wrote down the value of the old Western Areas assets. Are we in a bit of limbo? Like, where's IGO heading?
My gut feel there, Maddie, is that you look at where this company has come from. They had an instrumental leader in Peter Bradford, unfortunately passing away not too long ago. And I think that's, you know, partially left the company at a bit of a sort of culture loss, that he was a leader of the business. He transformed the business through some great deals. And then with Matt Ducci just having the interim CEO position for quite a while, it's sort of left them a bit rudderless at the moment.
Yeah.
And hence my thinking in Ivan Vella coming in and taking, you know, a minute to get comfortable with things before they really decide on what the direction is going forward.
And I guess it's a testament to how important Peter Bradford was to this company, as you said, transforming, and he's just very sadly passed away, and then the company's left in a bit of limbo without that fearless leader at the helm.
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely.
Yeah. Right. Now,
Allkem.
Allkem. So they come out with their, I guess it was an ore reserve and resource update for their Mount Catlin operation, so their lithium project down in Ravensthorpe. So we know Mount Catlin's struggled of recent times, especially with recovery, and it's sort of nearing the end of mine life. But they've released a reserve of they've said the reserves at the moment are 7.1 million tonne at 1.2%. And look, the open pit is scheduled to run at a 21.5-1 strip ratio at this back end. So it's getting to the end of its life. It's like probably been a good money spinner before that.
Yeah, and Mount Catlin's the one that we'd, you know, predicted or flagged that would potentially fall off once this Allkem Livent deal wraps up, right?
Yeah. So it's not a big core of their business at the moment. But look, they've mentioned in the update that they've started an underground feasibility study that will be released in calendar year 24. So they've got the reserves for the remainder of the pit, but without delving into it too much, there's obviously a lot of potential to continue the ore body underground, or whether convert some of that high strip ratio portion of the pit into a underground mine.
So is the takeaway there, Maddie, that if they do decide to go underground, that's a commitment to the asset? You know, not necessarily that it stays in their hands, but it's a commitment to investing money in the ground, that there's going to be a bit of a longer life at this one.
Well, is it a commitment by then, or they're prepping it up with a feasibility study to potentially sell the asset?
Yeah.
That could be another way to look at it. That's probably the more, and as you said, it's not a core part of there. They've got their, what is it, Olerez?
So they've got assets across the Americas,
So they're huge now. So this Mount Catlin's such a small portion of it, and it's their only asset in Australia.
Yeah, that's right.
So look,
that company's headquarters is also moving to North America.
Yeah, so yeah, and you look at it on face value, it's like, does it really belong in the portfolio?
Yeah.
So look, there is underground potential there by the sounds. And why not delve into a bit more? Look, the demand has never been higher, JD, for a relevant fun facts with Matty. I go on my tirades here and I thought I'd present one. And they're usually pretty similar themes. It's usually got something to do with underground mining.
Rip it, Matty. So what's the theme of this one?
Well, I thought, why not look at lithium going underground? Who's doing it? Where's it going to happen, and where might it happened and who are the parties involved. So we've got, it's obviously been disclosed by Allkem. They're doing an underground feasibility study. So there's one. Is that asset going to be sold out? If so, who's going to be taking that? We don't know yet, but we're going to talk about who the ones in the district. This will give everyone a hint of who they might be. So I guess the big leader coming to the forefront is Liontown's Kathleen Valley. So yep. that's coming online FY24,
yeah, calendar mid year. Mid next year,
that's going to be producing. Underground contract's going to be kicked off around October, November by the sound. So, and that's been underground from the start. They've reduced a bit of the pit, but it's all been predominantly an underground mine. She's a big humdinger. 3 million tonne a year coming out of the hole at the start, ramping up to 4 million tonne later in the decade. So that is, for people's understanding, that is a lot of material to come out of an underground mine. So, and there's been a lot of word on the decline about the increasing scope for that underground contract. So I guess increasing scope means more machines, it's getting bigger. So I guess probably I'd watch out to see if that 4 million tonne run rate that they originally had scheduled for about FY28, see if that actually comes forward a lot and they're going to try and get there quicker. So that's the big humdinger.
And then who else have we got?
You also got Core Lithium. Core Lithium, we spoke about them last week, JD, under a bit of selling pressure they were. So they've approved $45 to $50 million for development of a box cut and an underground feasibility study.
So that's for the BP33, which is meant to be the sort of cornerstone asset once their grants thing winds down a bit, 2025, 2026 sort of time period.
Yeah, so I got the picture up here. So look, and box cuts, that's just the surface earthworks to get down to that underground portal location, the top of the bloody funnel, you'd say. So, and they're saying that they're hoping once they reach a final investment decision for this, that the underground decline development will happen in parallel with the study. So as you can see here, looking at the ore body, it's a big, massive, bloody blob. I'm not sure how much of that's mineralised. It is, because that's a measured, indicated, and inferred resource. So she's a big, vertically dipping, thick ore body. So that's going to be potentially another big underground mine. Mineral Resources, JD.
So Mount Marion is the one you'd flagged in the past.
Yeah. Mineral Resources to date haven't done any underground mining. They've been everything's been a big surface bulk operations of crushing and mining services and iron ore and lithium. So in their, they released that business and lithium update since 16th of June. And that's I guess that's where the company got a lot of attention on where the business is going with the downstream side of things, which gave a bit of entertainment for the investor call that we played the other day. So they said in there that they will be exploring underground opportunities at their Mount Marion mine. So if you look at the picture here, again, another perfectly vertically dipping ore body. They hit 51 metres at 1.3% lithium, just below the life of mine pit design. So you look at that, that's an underground ore body. And I did mention the other week as well, their chief executive of lithium, Josh Thurlow. He was the underground manager when I was at Telfer, and then he went pretty high up within Newcrest. So Newcrest are predominantly underground. So he's got the underground experience to possibly add in the underground aspects to Mineral Resources, and we'll get into the potential wheeling and dealing there. And this is all linking up in the family tree, JD.
So another one that comes to mind in a similar sort of area to Mount Marion as well is Develop going into Essential.
And I guess that, besides Liontown, that was the first show of hands by a company that is really promoting this underground mining of lithium in Australia. Like, you had Liontown and everything. You did have Core, but there was just that, and we did speak about it the other day, everyone just thought lithium ore bodies is just their open pits, but they don't have to be. They don't have to be. There's no reason these steeply dipping ore bodies can't be mined underground, because we see by the strip ratio. So their scoping study said they had a strip ratio of 13 to 1. So, and as you can see at the ore body here, perfect for an underground mine. Small pit at the top, parallel develop your underground and start ripping into it from down there without having to move all the waste on top. You do have to put in ground support and ventilation and everything, but I would say, based on the studies, that will outweigh a very high strip ratio to make it economic. So Develops niche is underground. That's what they're doing there. And then you've also MinRes have, they've got the 13.5% shareholding in Develop. They've also got the shareholding in Essential. So MinRes, they're tied up there. That's what MinRes used as the blocking stake for the IGO Tianqi proposed takeover.
Yeah. Okay. So is there any other, I mean, the other assets sort of come to mind in the area? You got Global Lithium with Mana.
Well, I'll put up the map here, JD. So let's look at how they all interlock. So you got, as I said, you got Essential Metals, you got Mount Marion possibly going underground, you got Develop taken over Essential. So you could nearly put your bottom dollar on Develop being involved due to the all the shareholding connection with Mineral Resources. Develop will be definitely the front runner to be doing that Mount Marion underground side of things if that comes through, which you would assume it will. There's shitloads of lithium there. It's going underground. That's where it's heading. They're not going to keep stripping the pit out. You've also got Global Lithium. So we talked about them the other day. Now, if you look at the picture I brought up here, it's a bit, a lot of the loads are a bit more, it's not one homogenous unit, as you can see on the left here. There is the one on the right there that'd be perfect. But look, their life of mine strip ratio is 22-1. It is back end weighted, so it's about less than 15-1 for the first 3 years, but very, very high at the back end. So they're looking at those same situation. There's no reason that can't be small pits on the top and start going underground. You've got Mineral Resources own 8% of Global Lithium. So there's another connection there. So where that project will sit, who knows? You can just see Mineral Resources, and this will come true for my thesis, JD. Mineral Resources and Develop merging to be a mining services and owner powerhouse. It's still going to happen. I won't say guaranteed. It's still my prediction. So you got the Global Lithium one there. Won't talk about Bald Hill. We don't know what's going to happen to that, but that's obviously an operating mine, so that's still going through its saga to see who's end up going to possibly own that in the future. We don't know. You've also got Delta Lithium's Mount Ida project. So there, you see there all their investor presentations for the last few months. They've got the conceptual underground mine designs put on the resource here. Again, still another very close to steeply dipping ore body. So that's going to be coming online as well. So they're talking about getting DSO out as soon as possible. That's the underground for the open pit, but that's another possible contract that could be coming online once they get a final investment decision to see when and if this underground is going to happen.
Okay, Matty. So putting the
And MinRes are on the register there too, JD.
All right, okay. Putting the consolidation that you've touched on to the side for the moment. That's a separate matter. But underground lithium mining, are all these companies, in your opinion, looking at how Liontown's Kathleen Valley goes first, or why are you saying that they all come out with scoping studies that show open pits as opposed to undergrounds?
Well, it's a good question, JD, because I can't I've never mined spodumene or pegmatites underground with my own hands. They're like a quartzy thing. So, look, rocks are rocks. I can't see what is going to be the issue of mining lithium underground compared to any other commodity. You're just blowing up rocks. I can't see why you wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
To be honest, were they trying to prep these assets to be a simple pit because once you start doing pits and then going underground as well, underground requires a lot more capital to get it happening, because you've got your ventilation infrastructure, your pumping systems and everything like that, and the ground support and everything that goes in. So it is a lot higher cost to go underground, but that would offset these high strip ratio operations. So were they prepping the assets to potentially be more appealing without the underground component? I don't know. Like, if anyone's got some more colour on that, feel free to get in touch.
And there's one more thing I want to comment on the matter. This whole thematic, lithium, plays in towards electric vehicles, towards reducing carbon emissions across the world. And it also, it ties in with the ESG thematic. And I do wonder going forward whether getting permits and such for underground mining will be easier because it doesn't leave that, you know, scar on the earth.
Yeah.
So it could tie in with the thesis of being, you know, ESG check, green, critical material check type of company, thereby, you know, doing an underground mine.
And it also gives them potential, in addition to all that, if they've got greenfields projects that they can design from the start, they can design them to have more underground vertical hoisting possibly and electrify the mine.
Exactly. The guys at Wyloo spoke about that and it was just fascinating to hear for Eagle's Nest, the asset they scooped up from Noront up in Canada, yeah, that because they're not buying a already producing asset, they can from the outset make it a completely green carbon-free mine. And it's fascinating. Obviously, they've got relatively deeper pockets than an exploration business.
Yep.
But it's a fascinating angle and I think something we'll see more and more of going forward.
And the way to electrify a mine is going to require a lot of capital because you're going to delay that first ore because you're going to want to get as much vertical development in to get the haulage system in to you, because electricity can power a shaft to hoist the dirt out from underground.
Much harder for all the trucks.
Not yet determined that if electricity can fully power an underground trucking fleet because you're tramming up a decline and chewing the shit out of the battery.
Yeah.
So that's where the opportunity. God, I heard something. There was some technology out that's being developed or discussed about similar to a train where they'll have like a bloody electric cable running in the shoulder of the decline and then the trucks can hook onto that like a train line, yep, and power them going up. So look, there is potential for those sort of things to be done, but yeah, definitely not in the near term. So, and oh look, how could we forget our friends at Patriot? I reckon that'd be another, looking at where that high grade Nova Zone is sitting at about 150 metres below the surface based on the one block model grade distribution cross-section they showed. That'd be an underground mine as well if you want to get there quicker. But is underground mining in North America going to be a success based on how all the Aussies have performed over there to date? So
remains to be seen.
Yeah, so awesome, a bit to watch out, Ed. MinRes definitely got a lot of fingers in the pie and yeah, develop sitting good, well alongside them with their partnership and shareholdings. A lot to play out there.
Maybe there's one more I want to touch on today, and that's 29 Metals. This is a company we've talked about quite a bit in the past. Just last week we spoke about the troubles they're facing. They had to draw down on debt and they had operations, you know, cash flow from operations for both their assets going in the wrong direction. But they came out with an announcement today and it was super, super brief, just a couple of lines.
They're back up a bit.
The market's loving it. They're up 18%. And what they pretty much said is Capricorn Copper, their assets up in Queensland, are back up and running. And I imagine this is in a pretty small scale to start. It's not at Esperanza South, the sort of flagship ore body there. It's going to start with Mammoth and Greenstone, and also some mineral processing has also started. So it's a huge weight off the stock, and hence you're seeing the share price up. You can only really go off the May restart plan, and that's sort of what led me to say that it's a partial restart. These things are going to take a bit of time. Esperanza South is only going to come on at the soonest in the first half of 2024. So we'll have to wait and see. And in the meantime, we're going to keep our eyes fixed on that cash and debt position to see if they have to do any raising or such, or they can, you know, keep going from here and stay on a good path now.
I think an uplift in copper and zinc is just paramount for this company's success, I think. You know, we see zinc trading at shitty lows. It's halved. Copper's down. It just, yeah, hasn't gone in the direction that people were thinking just yet. So yeah, definitely very leveraged to that.
Like we said with these ones, as well as, you know, the likes of Galena and Panoramic, they need multiple things to go their way.
Very much so, JD. Good job, mate. Trav's fucked off for a bloody bit of, I suppose I'll let him do a bit of business development too. I can't share the workload. Yeah, because I'm just absolutely flogging myself all the time trying to catch up with all these people and have beers and promote the business. And
it's noble what you're doing, mate.
It's wearing me down. So look, beauty. Good on you, JD. Love it. Thanks to the partners of the show, Terra Capital and Anytime Exploration. Love the support. We love yous dearly as well, personally. I'll give yous a kiss when I see yous next.
Hootaroo, Maddie.
Hootaroo, JD. I like being on this side with you.
Good, eh?
The information contained in this episode of Money of Mine is of general nature only and does not take into account the objectives, financial situation, or needs of any particular person. Before making any investment decision, you should consult with your financial advisor and consider how appropriate the advice is to your objectives, financial situation, and needs.